And it's time for episode 32 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Well, I think we have to tell him the truth.
If we tell the truth, the timeline...
Timeline! This is no time to argue about time. We don't have the time.
James, I hope you appreciated that. Anyway, it's Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering season 2, episode 7, Light and Shadows. In other words, the search for Spock finally ends.
Oh, that's funny.
But we have some feedback covering our prior episodes. Actually, just covering the last episode. So let's open hailing frequencies, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay, well... First is from James, and that was for you. Just listen to you guys. Oh my God, Ruthie, I had literally just finished singing. I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati. Out loud, by myself, in my minivan. Yes, I'm a nerd. When you sang it too, had me rolling. Well, now I've sung it too, so... Brian, it's funny you bring up the closed captioning on CBS All Access, and you brought it up in a time before with it being an annoying font. I was like, my font isn't like that. And this listen, I was like, there are apostrophes. Then I realized when I watch my gateway to All Access is actually Prime Video, which is different because even though I get All Access, I am not an All Access account holder. It definitely uses the Prime closed captioning service at that point. That may be an option for you if the CBS closed captioning becomes too annoying. I know I use them all the time because my hearing is shot and I always have trouble with dialogue, even with the really nice Bose theater system that I have that has an enhanced dialogue setting on it. I'm glad my term thingamadoo got over so well. Yes. It is worth three thingamajigs. Anyway, I actually use that term all the time when I can't think of the name of something. LOL. Thursday isn't coming soon enough. Hoping we see some Jet Reno too. Did I mention she's my favorite character? Yeah, I think you did.
Once or twice.
Yes, and unfortunately.
No Jet Reno.
No Jet Reno. And I have tried the Amazon video app. Now, I should explain the majority of viewings that I watch for, especially when we are trying to prep for doing the podcast, most of the time I'm watching it on my phone. In fact, unfortunately, this time I watched all of them on my phone, all seven times. Yeah, I like the episode, okay? But anyway,
a little bit.
But all seven... It was over the phone. So I was struck with this strange apostrophe thing. I don't know. It could be a bug in the CBS All Access app. I've never noticed this happening on any other videos that I play. And as far as the Amazon app, I have tried that. And the Amazon app actually has it may have been fixed. I don't know since then. But I've tried it recently, like within the last couple of weeks. And there's a bug with Amazon on my Android that for some reason the controls are disappear from my screen. Like I can't pause. I can't rewind or fast forward. I can't do anything. And the only way I can get rid of, you know, do something is actually to close the app and to bring it back up again. And that is far more annoying than not seeing a few apostrophes. So, and I don't know if it has something to do with, you know, I've got the Galaxy S8 Plus, which isn't a really new phone. I mean, it's 2 years old, but it's possible that because it's got a weird access ratio, or aspect ratio is what I meant to say, it may be causing an issue with that. I don't know, but it's really annoying. I've noticed it not just on the CBS All Access, but like anything on Amazon. So I tend not to use it.
Interesting.
Even though we have it. So yes, it's probably an excuse to get an iPhone, but my wife got an iPhone fairly recently and it was like $1,400. So not going to happen. Because she got like the most expensive iPhone XS Max. So anyway.
Interesting.
All right. We got one other bit of feedback from Fred, our assistant.
Our friend from the Netherlands.
Yes. Yes. And I say that because he's been doing an amazing job with images for us. That is a task that neither of us like to do, and he loves it. So it's like,
so we super appreciate it.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, and he's been helping out just overall. So thank you so much, Fred. Totally appreciate it. All right. So Ruthie, why don't you read his extra feedback?
Extra feedback. Okay. He says, I'm talking in my audio feedback about that I disliked the way they portrayed the Ba'ul and that they more look like Venom from Spider-Man, of which my son had an action figure when he was 6 or so. I asked my son today, now 15, if he remembered that action figure. Normally, it's difficult to find old toys in his room, but in this case, he knew exactly where to find this thing. And I have to say, he really played a lot with it back then. See the picture here. It was difficult to find it on the internet, but it seems to be called Venom Symbiote Ooze Attack from Spider-Man 3. The action figure from 2006 can be filled from the back with black slime, which can come out of its mouth when you push a button. Ew.
That's gross.
Was that from Facebook or Twitter?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, he pasted it. He put it on Facebook, but I think he might have put it on Twitter as well. But
the picture is on Facebook.
Yeah.
Obviously, no one can see the picture.
Yeah.
So go on Facebook, find Fred, or Twitter, find Fred. You can see the picture.
Yeah. And it's attached to the last episode, the season 2, episode 6. It's at the bottom of it. But as you can see, Ruthie, that does look a lot like a Ba'ul.
I definitely
see the resemblance there. I really do. So. Okay. Season 2, Episode 7 is titled Light and Shadows. Teleplay by Ted Sullivan, co-executive producer, and he has written some of the stellar episodes of this show so far. He co-wrote Lethe. He wrote What's Past is Prologue, which is, of course, the climax of the Mirror episodes last season. He co-wrote Brother, the season premiere, and he wrote the teleplay and co-wrote the story of Light and Shadow. So that's pretty impressive. And the story was written by him, as I mentioned, and Vaughn Wilmot, who wrote the second episode, the New Eden, I believe. And it is directed by Marta Cunningham, and I believe that's her first episode of Star Trek Discovery, but she has a tie to this show. She is James Frayn's wife.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she's directed a lot of other TV shows, and she's a co-executive producer of TNT's show, which I've never heard of before, but it's a show on TNT called Claws. Like, get your claws into it, not Santa Claus. And the description is, in researching what is left of the Rent Angel signal over Kaminar, Pike and Tyler end up in battle with time itself. Giorgio has a few tricks up her sleeve for Leland and Section 31. And that was a TVPG and, of course, aired in the United States and Canada on February 28th, 2019. Okay, so we're going to play Spot the 47, which we haven't been able to do. And one time, I think, for the season premiere, I forgot But we have a 47, and that is, of course,
841-947. Crazy.
And with that, I'm going to break my normal routine, and I'm going to give my rating. I'm going to give this one 9.841947 time blenders.
That's funny.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that.
So what'd you think?
I liked it. I mean, I loved it. It was great. It's one of my most favorite science fiction topics.
Yes, me too. I love
time manipulation stuff. Yeah. And I really just wanted someone to say wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Okay, but, so what would you give this episode for a rating?
I think a rating of 9.841947 is good.
Oh, I love that. I have to say.
Oh, goodness.
Yep. I couldn't resist that. Now, I will say, even though it's a 9.841947, it is not a perfect episode. And it has actually one major flaw. But I'm not going to dock it too much, but it is, once you figure out what this flaw is, you won't be able to, like, forget it. So,
is the transporter room a set somewhere else?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
that is not a factor in this one. No, it's a little more fundamental, but I'm not going to dock the episode much because I don't know, it's difficult to really do an episode like this. And it's not the fact that it's only 40 minutes long. I want to make that clear. And by the way, I'll just say this now since I brought it up. How come there wasn't a previously on in this episode?
I cannot answer that question.
I don't know. Like, and I think that's part of the reason why it was only 40 minutes and something. Because there wasn't like a minute and a half of preview. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Or should I say previously on. All right, so we have listener ratings. Ruthie, even though I just let you give your rating, I'm going to let you give Kyle's rating.
Okay. Kyle says, 10 out of 10, this is our Game of Thrones. I am beyond happy the Trek is back, and back in a way that should make every Trekkie happy.
Yeah, and I'll say Kyle, who of course is our friend and he's my co-host on Fear the Walking Dead talk through. Kyle was the one that like, he messaged me around, I don't know, 10:30 or something and told me how wonderful this episode was. I'm like, I haven't finished watching it yet. So I was a little late, getting to watch it because my wife and I were doing stuff. So, But I still ended up watching it 7 times. So there you go.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, I do know.
You know that I am. So.
Yes, I do.
I'm not going to try to hide that.
You should not. You be you.
It is not a flaw. It is a quality.
It's all right. A strength. Thank you very much.
Yes. All right. James, our friend James, gives it 9 Telos 4 tie-ins. Would have been higher, but you guys know my reasoning for the deduction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we know. Anyway.
Sorry, bro.
Yep. Next.
Next is John. And John says 9 out of 10. Alice in Wonderland is the answer. I don't care what show you're watching.
Yep. Our Twitter friend, Ken from Chicago, and that's literally his Twitter handle, Ken from Chicago. Mm-hmm. He gives it 8 out of 10 time space probes that couldn't possibly be launched from the Discovery, but had to be launched from a shuttle when Star Trek Discovery presents buddy cops, Pike and Tyler, career Starfleet, and ex-Klingon who must overcome differences to beat a bad robot while Burnham goes through the looking glass on a personal search for Spock down a Vulcan rabbit hole and a mad queen who threatens to chop the head off of her Section 31 ship.
Gosh, that was a mouthful.
That definitely was a mouthful. But that was funny, Ken.
That was funny. Agreed.
I thought about, like, actually cutting it up and just say time space probes, but I'm like, no. Gotta give this one all of it. So,
yep. Gotta give it its due.
All right, next.
Alrighty. Next, next is Sven. And Sven says, oh my, what can I say? 9.35 out of 10 time tsunamis.
Mark, who I might get to see next week. We'll see. Yeah. Cause he's going to be in Orlando for a podcasting conference. I'm not going to the podcasting conference, but hopefully I'll get to see, him and Daryl, our owner of the network. So
fearless leader,
several people going to be there. Hopefully I'm not committing to it, but hopefully I'll go and see those guys.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. He gave it 7.5 bad pennies.
Mm, didn't like it, huh?
Mark's been a tough critic this season.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right, next.
Okay, next, Fred from the Netherlands. 8.5 turbo lift tracks. I think I never saw in any Star Trek the turbo lifts from the outside during their trajectory. I agree. I've never seen that. It was cool.
Yeah. Rick from Cleveland gives it 9.9. Tilly's trying not to curse on duty.
Oh, Tilly. She is amazing. Steve says 9 out of 10 fourth dimensional math problems.
And Brian from Hawaii, and I didn't thank him before, but we did get another extended piece of feedback from Brian that unfortunately was too long for the podcast. I think we're gonna like do a greatest hits of Brian during the hiatus and tackle some of these like deep Star Trek topics. Thoughts. That, yeah. But anyway, Brian
deep gives thoughts it. By Jack Handy.
What's up? Oh, yeah.
I said deep thoughts by Jack Handy.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. That's a Star Trek or a Saturday Night Live reference for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah. I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
I have not seen a deep thoughts by Jack Handy in a really long time. So yeah. I'm going to say nope.
I don't think so either. All right. Well, anyway, he gives this one a 9 out of 10 robotic red dots.
Hmm.
He says that may be my highest rating of an episode yet in Discovery. Okay, cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So it's time for our yeses.
Yes.
All right. You want to read the first one?
Alrighty. John says Spock, Giorgio dropping the Burnham parents bomb and a new and improved killer probe and Sarek's emotional moment.
Yes. James says, Spock has arrived, and I have to say...
Oh, gracious me.
Have to change it up. You know, I can't do the same old sound effects. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm still adjusting to not seeing Leonard or Zachary portray him. The real test is yet to be seen. Whether Ethan Peck can pull off such a complex character will be when his mind is put back together. Yes.
Mm,
yes. Mm-hmm. Very true. And secondly, he also says Talos 4. Yes. I was really surprised when that came up, but when it came up, I'm like, that makes total sense. So I might as well say it here. If you remember, and for those of you that don't know TOS very well, obviously I know Ruthie does, the cage takes place
very well.
Well, okay. You know it well enough. Anyway, the cage, basically they Pike and crew go to Talos 4, and I'm not going to give too much of it up, but then, you know, 11 years later, they go back to Talos 4. And one thing I had wondered, like, was how did Spock arrange to go back? And it seemed like something had happened, which would have created a relationship there. But I didn't understand it because supposedly you're not, they said the only death penalty that was still on the books was to like go to Talos 4. That was strictly verboten. And yet they go. So I wondered how does this take place? Really? It doesn't make sense. Like something must have happened. Well, now we know what happened. They're going to go to Talos 4 and something's going to, that they would put a death penalty on the books, although I wouldn't be surprised they kind of scrubbed that out of the record.
Mm.
I don't know. We'll see. But yeah. The fact that going to Talos 4, makes total sense if you go back to canon. So, All right, next.
Okay. Oh, Sven again.
Yes, he gets Sven again.
Says so many, but above all, the Talos IV cliffhanger tie-in to TOS's The Menagerie. I can't remember why Talos IV was called The Forbidden Planet, but the episode was famous. Leftovers from the Cage episode in which Spock kidnaps Pike to do the trip. Why was that exactly? Ended up to be one of the best TOS episodes. Everything sounds cooler when you put time in front of it. Okay, time tsunami, not so much.
And what you just experienced is an example of Brian not reading far enough ahead in the notes. Because I wouldn't have said all that, but
yeah. Repeat yes. Yourself.
Yeah. All right. Next is Fred from the Netherlands. He says, Spock is seen in the whole episode. I was expecting him to pop up just in the last scene. I had thought of that, but I was glad that didn't happen. Mm. Secondly, the Burnham Giorgio cat fight. Yeah, yeah. I like that too.
Yes, indeed.
Next, he says, a lot of Amanda. I like Mia Kirshner. I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan Peck being the son of James Frayne. I really like the typecasting on facial appearance and voice tone. It's nicely done. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but I think you're like right on the money there. They do have a very similar voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see a bit of a facial resemblance too. So, cool.
Indeed. All righty. Rick from Cleveland says, the conflict between Pike and Tyler. I loved this dynamic. Sorry, there's no way to get rid of him, sir. I know the feeling. I wrote that down too. Oh, gosh. Watching Giorgio manipulate everyone is always interesting. No sign of the budget change. At the same time, I also enjoyed the old school toggle switches in the shuttles. This subtle detail takes us a little closer to classic Trek feel.
Yeah, I noticed this too, and I thought to myself, this makes it more like the original. So part of me looks at it and says, you know, well, Discovery's not like this at all. But then I say, hey, well, here's an example of a shuttlecraft that has all the same kind of, you know, mechanical dials and all that. And it still looks up to date, other than the fact that it looks like a cockpit. You know, like a jumbo jet cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool. We got one more. Yes. And that is from Brian from Hawaii. And he says, detail of the Vulcan flyover scene and Talos IV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did like the Vulcan flyover scene. It didn't seem as arid as I would have thought. But then again, you know, it's probably like Phoenix. And a lot of people live in Phoenix, so, you know.
Hot. Or it could be that they filmed all of the TOS episodes in a desert, no matter where they were going.
True. Okay, so I'm going to go and give my yeses, and then we'll hear from Ruthie. I already mentioned that I love me some episodes dealing with time. Those end up being, I think, my favorite, like, other than, say, Best of Both Worlds or something like that, I would say the majority of Star Trek episodes that I love have something to do with time travel. And same with the movies, like First Contact, The Voyage Home, even the, you know, first Kelvin movie, they deal with time travel. And so I would definitely say give that as one. And this definitely has time travel. Oh, cause and effect. That's another one I love. Magic to make the sanest man go mad. Another time travel thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So beyond that, I got a flashback from the Matrix in this episode. Was that a sentinel? Those tentacles or whatever from the probe, that looked just like the sentinels from the Matrix. And I thought that was really cool, because to me, you don't see that enough. And I've always loved those, the sentinels from the Matrix. And It's like, I came out like 20 years ago now. Holy cow. Okay, so my last is Tilly, and that's when she says, freaking amazing. And then, what the frick?
Mm-hmm.
I think that this was probably in reaction to people objecting about the language. And I thought that the way that they did it, I thought that was, it was really well done. And, you know,
it was funny because she's like, I'm trying not to cuss.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I love her, too. And I love Saru's reactions to her. He's like looking at her and just shaking his head like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, she was great. She was spot on this episode, of course.
She always is. She's such a talent.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Everything sounds cooler when you put time in front of it.
And that's why I said it's time for. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. When Stamets says non-linear temporal progression is a mind bender. It was at that point in time that I really wanted someone to say wibbly wobbly timey wimey. And someone, I think it was also Stamets, he had some cool quotes this week. Trust the math. And then he said, trust yourself. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that too. I love that too. And I had to when I heard trust the math, I had to think of a fellow host of The Edge, which is another Star Trek Discovery podcast, Amy Nelson, who is a math teacher. Hi, Amy. I don't think she listens, but I thought of her. And I even posted on their Facebook group about
trusting the math.
Trust the math. Yeah. So that was cool. Okay. So now it is time for.
No!
Well, it is, unfortunately. So. All right. I'm going to go first. Our first listener note is from John. He says, no follow through on Culber. Mm. Yeah. I thought that was a little strange. I think that he could have fit into the episode. I mean, and that goes to the second point. He says, and that the episode was only 40 minutes. It's not like they didn't have time. And we already played Troy, so.
But ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah. Well, I could do that too. Anyway. All right. So next is James.
Okay, James' number one is, you guys know my number one already. Someone was missing. It's Janet Reno.
You mean Jet Reno.
Jet Reno.
Yes, not former Attorney General Janet Reno.
Oh, my gosh.
Believe me, I've heard other podcasters make the same mistake. So.
It's Jet Reno. Ugh. Pike seemed a little too eager to risk life and limb just because he missed the war. I think he'd be a little more sensible than that, seeing as he's considered one of the top captains in Starfleet. I would think he'd be concerned with furthering the mission, not personal valor.
Well, I would agree with that, except for one major point, and that is, this is the era of Captain James T. Kirk, who always went on all the away missions. So while we know better that captains shouldn't go on the away missions, 10 years from now, well, it's actually less than that at this point, but 7 years from now, the captain will be James T. Kirk, and he'll go on every away mission. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, but.
And they kind of covered that nicely, too.
Yeah.
But you're key personnel. You can't go.
But I'm most qualified.
Yeah. But I would agree, though. He was overcompensating. And I think Tyler was correct calling him on it. So.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't really feel like he was doing that, honestly. To me, it didn't really seem that he was trying to be so whatever. I don't know. I didn't think so. But apparently, that was the case because that's the way that they wrote it.
Yeah.
Or they wrote that to be the truth, which I was like, I don't see it. But all right, you guys say it's happening. I guess you know what you're talking about since you wrote the episode.
Yeah. I think it's the influence of captains that are in the 24th century, you know, Picard, mm-hmm. especially. you know, Picard didn't go on most of the away missions. It was Riker that always leaded them. Yeah. So I think that's part of it, but
I think that's why it was nice that they addressed it the way that they did, though.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of bridging the gap there between people who watched The Next Generation first, maybe, and aren't expecting this. And so, but they didn't, maybe they didn't watch the original series or something. And so they aren't familiar with the captain always being down there on the planet and, you know.
Yeah. For people that, and there are some that, their first Star Trek is Discovery. I've found some people in different Facebook groups that are saying that they never got into Star Trek until Discovery. So that's pretty cool. Mm. But anyway, they may not realize that this is kind of a pattern that we've seen because, if you recall, Lorca never went on away missions. He never went on a single one.
That's true.
So, well,
did they have very many away missions?
No.
I mean, they had some, but they didn't have that many.
No, they had some, but it was usually Burnham going on them. And
they had the one big away mission, which was when they went to the Mirror Universe.
Right, right. And I guess technically that would have him going on the away mission, but I don't really count that as a
no.
No. So
not in the traditional sense.
Right. Okay. Next is Fred from the Netherlands. He says Pike seen in a double timeline on the bridge, but nobody else. Yeah, I noticed that actually, especially on subsequent watches. There were a few examples of that where we saw time effects, but it was really only affecting one person or something like that, or wasn't affecting everyone. So, yeah, I will grant you that one. And much like some people saying no Culber, Fred also mentions no Cornwell. Well, a lot of episodes don't have Cornwell, so I would agree with that. By the way, since I mentioned Culber with mentioning Cornwell, I noticed that in the credits, there was like a gap. I don't know if you noticed this at all, but in the credits that, you know, play, there was like a gap between the starring actors. And I wonder if... Well, I know one of them was Wilson Cruz, but it was really long. So I wonder if they're going to put Ethan Peck in the credits after this episode. They probably didn't put him in there just for a surprise, but I'm curious to see if he's going to be in there for the rest of the episodes.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Next.
Okay. Next we have Rick from Cleveland. Rain on Vulcan. That just doesn't seem right. Negative Tilly. Her reactions in the heart of the episode seemed out of character for her. Even still, putting time in front of things does make them cooler.
She was a bit of a negative Nancy. I mean, Tilly. In this, I did notice that as well, Rick. So I'm not really sure why she was as negative as she was, but it definitely seemed like she was negative. I mean, maybe this is a part of her experience with May, you know? I don't know.
Maybe. Waha.
Maybe. Thank you. You're welcome. Okay, next is Brian from Hawaii. He has the Pike-Tyler confrontational relationship. Didn't like that, huh? How did Spock get to Amanda and she managed to hide him exactly? That's a good question, I would say. All right, so it is time for our nose. So what you got?
Nothing.
Okay.
I never have anything for nose.
Okay. Well,
they always come out in the episode discussion. I never like consciously think about, oh, I didn't like that. That's a no.
All right. Well, here is my fundamental flaw with the plot of this episode. And like I say, I obviously didn't penalize the episode too much because my rating was really high. But I have to ask, why couldn't Sarek mind meld with Spock to fix him?
That is a good question.
Yeah. And okay, so we know that the Katra stones were inhibiting whatever. but whatever does that affect the mind meld too? And for that matter, just taking that another step, why does Section 31 have to go through this, like, you know, brain masher, thought extractor, or whatever it was called. It was some kind of its extractor. So why couldn't they have a Vulcan do a mind meld? That's what I don't understand. I mean, is he so messed up that a mind meld won't help?
I don't know. I mean, it makes sense that it would be his dad to do it, though.
Exactly.
I'm sure his dad knows him best.
Yeah. I didn't get that, though. Like, Sarek wasn't even considering that as an option. Now, we know he never did a mind meld with Spock, because that's brought up in unification on TNG, because eventually Spock mind melded with Picard, because that allowed him to experience the mind meld that Picard had with Sarek, of course. So we know from a canon thing that they couldn't have a mind meld, but I just wonder, it's like, well, why didn't that happen? And it's not like he couldn't have had a mind meld with somebody else. So that's my fundamental flaw. I thought of that and I went, oh yeah. Yeah, I can't explain that. So that's my flaw.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So the other thing is, Leland doesn't know where Burnham's going to take Spock. Really? I don't buy that for a second. I really don't. Like, you'd have to figure that she's eventually going to take him back to Discovery. Like, even though she doesn't go there
immediately,
you have to think that she would eventually take him there. So I certainly could see why they wouldn't figure out Talos IV, but
yeah.
So that's another one that I had to. Yeah, and I don't know what to think of Leland at all right now. And I'll get to that in the next segment here. But all right, speaking of our next segment, it is, of course.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Never get tired of that.
Hold those horses.
Why don't you give the first one?
All right. John says, to me, the conflict between Pike and Tyler seemed forced for plot. Me no likey.
Yeah, I guess. I did understand it, though. I think that Pike really doesn't understand Tyler more. Like, I think the rest of the officers that have been on Discovery do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get that. It does seem a little forced, but it seemed like they kind of resolved the conflicts, you know, by the end of the episode. So,
yeah, I didn't really think it seemed forced, but that was just me. It was my take on it. So I don't know.
All right. James is next. And he says, it seemed Sarek got highly emotional in the crypt scene. He seemed to be upset with Amanda for not being honest with him about Spock. And then he seemed to show a great deal of affection and concern for his children. I don't know if it was just the way it was written or Frayn's portrayal there, but when he didn't seem to be the stoic Sarek that we've all come to know since Trek has been around, you could really hear it in his tone and in his eyes. Could it be effects of the intense meditation or perhaps an early symptom of Bendai syndrome? I don't see how it could be an early symptom of Bendai syndrome, because if I remember that's a syndrome that affects Vulcans over the age of 200. So in this case, I can't see how that would affect him here, but it could be the meditation. But it's also worth saying that Vulcans do experience emotion. They just repress it. And I think I heard James Frayn talk about this today, actually, because I'll skip forward and I'll say that, because I usually bring up who did the Ready Room. It's James Frayn this week.
Woo.
Yeah. And anyway, so he talks about that a little bit. And I think that it's just that Vulcans try to bury that and repress that, but you see it. And we have seen him show emotion with Burnham in the, like, season one, for sure. It's just that,
yeah,
you know.
The thing about that is the emotion needs to be incredibly intense.
Yeah.
For it to bleed through that way.
Yeah.
So to me, that's not really an indication of Frayn not doing a good job. It's an indication of Frayn doing a great job.
Yes.
Because the only time that emotion slips through is when it's incredibly intense. And the way that he feels about his children is incredibly intense.
Yes.
And what you said is exactly right. And it's not that Vulcans are robots or automatons or whatever. They just have a terrible, terrible history with emotion. So their answer to that is to be ruled by logic and to not let their emotions get out of control. I mean, as Spock himself said to himself, actually, no, he said that to Captain Kirk. Trust me, I'm emotionally compromised. So when, you know, he was talking about witnessing the death of his entire planet and his mother.
Yeah.
That he tells younger Captain Kirk that his younger self is definitely feeling some stuff.
Yeah.
So he doesn't, and he doesn't have to push buttons too hard to get him to explode.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. To me, I feel the exact opposite of that because of everything I said.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. That Vulcans do show, they do have emotions. In fact, they're intense. They just work really, really hard to repress them because they found that if they didn't, the emotion would destroy them.
Yeah.
And it's worth saying it, that. And it's also worth saying, you can see this in many different ways with the Vulcans. Like, I think their prejudice comes out of that repression of emotion. Like, because there's some things about them, like the way, for example, this was mentioned in Lethe, like they wouldn't let both Burnham and Spock serve in the Vulcan expeditionary group. And the way it was phrased to me, it's like, you're being racist here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like I say, they wrap their emotions sometimes around logic and, you know, they shield it and make it seem like it's logic. But if you look at it, it's kind of, it's logic that's been kind of framed by emotion.
Yeah.
That's my take on it anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily say it's racist, but I guess it kind of is because every other race does not have that quality, but
yeah.
It's like they look down on people who
yes.
can't or don't control their emotions.
Yeah, maybe racist isn't the right thing to say there, but it is a superiority complex.
Yeah, I was going to say, to me, it's almost like they feel morally superior because I'm able yes. to control my emotions, so therefore I'm better than you.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly that's a much better way of saying what I try to say. There is a feeling of I'm better than you. So,
yeah. And I don't know, to a certain extent, I guess, but I feel like if everyone practiced doing that from the time they were born, we probably all could. It's just that we don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Humans as a race or species or whatever don't typically hide their emotions. I don't know. I'm sure there are some cultures on the planet that do, and I have no idea what I'm talking about. But here in America, no, I mean, like, I feel like they think that you can't. And I don't think it's a matter of can't. I think it's just a matter of don't.
I think the way James Frain said it today on the Ready Room is he said that it was passion that could destroy the Vulcans. It was the expression of passion, I guess. And mm-hmm. how the Vulcan society dealt with it was by repressing that passion. And I think that's a great way of looking at it. But it's also worth saying he's doing a phenomenal job as Sarek. I realize that some people would say that this isn't the Sarek that they know, but I don't really have a problem with it because it's so well played.
I know. I love James Frain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking today about him on Orphan Black. And and I know Fred, he'll probably say something about this next week, but he played a character called Ferdinand Chevalier, I think his name was.
Yeah,
Ferdinand. I think so. And oh my God, I mentioned this on the Walking Dead talk through. We were talking one season about like shows we were watching over the break. And I went in this one episode, I went from absolutely hating that character. 90 seconds later, I loved him.
I know. It was a complete about face.
Yeah. And it was just the way that he did that. And it's like, how can you do that as an actor? I mean, it was, and we had exactly the same reaction to it. And anyway, he's so good.
He's so good.
Yeah. So anyway,
he's amazing.
I don't think that we've earned a Blaine here, but close. So why don't we move on? Next is Fred. Why don't you read that one?
All right. Fred from the Netherlands says, since when do shuttles have warp capability? Especially in the pre-Kirk time period. It's a good question, Brian.
I try not to think about that kind of thing too much anymore because it just gets tired. It's like we've said it before, and I remember saying this a couple of times this week on the Facebook group. Discovery is not the show that either of us would have created. And there are things that they've done that I think unnecessarily aggravate the haters. But it's not even the haters. It's people that love the show. It's just that they've changed some things. Some of them I get and some of them I don't. And this is one of those things where it's like, yeah, I do remember the fact that it was – I don't think we saw any shuttle that had warp capability until maybe the runabouts. I was going to call it the roundabouts.
Ha.
Yeah. Anyway, the runabouts from that were first on DS9. But I think that they had them. It's just that we never saw them do warp. So it's like, okay, basically I'm just kind of – giving him a pass on this, but it is one of those things. It's like I wanted to. He's actually had a really good a couple of anti haters episodes on his YouTube channel. Ket Wolski is the guy. His channel is KetWolski. If you want to look it up, he did a thing where he was talking about the what the haters said, and in one of his videos. It was an interview done at, I think, New York Comic Con with Alex Kurtzman. And he mentioned in this video that I don't know if it was ever anything I had ever seen before. So I was really paying attention to this. But basically, he said in 2017 that they had to make certain changes to make the show current. And I get that. That's his reasoning for, you know, making the series look different. And I mean, if you think about it, it's like I say, it's like, are with, you know, like I do this, of course.
Delicious chipper.
those are on a soundboard, which are playing on my iPad. Are you going to go back to like a thing that is all mechanical and that? Like, or are you going to have displays that are all mechanical? Like, okay, great. The shuttle had mechanical switches on it. That's great. But do you expect everything to be like that? Because that's not the way it is in 2019. So how can you have things look like TOS Trek? It's difficult. Like, and it's not just – people have to get – I feel like I'm on my soapbox right now. But – and I'm not accusing Fred of this. I want to make sure that
– beat that dead horse.
Yes. I'm going to beat it one final time. And that, anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that us longtime fans of Star Trek have to remember that if we're going to pass this on to our children and our children's children, and if Star Trek's going to keep, you know, evolving, it's difficult to show them Captain Kirk. Like, I said this a few episodes back, but I've been watching TOS and there's some of the it's kind of rough to watch it. There's a lot of misogynistic behavior, and you know, you don't see women captains and the mini skirts and all of that stuff. And of course, you know, I hate to say it, but those uniforms look like they're wearing pajamas. And that's it's like you can't, I don't think you can really do that in 2019. It's just not.
You can't. That show is definitely a product of its time, and its time was the 1960s.
Yeah.
Different mentality, different ways of viewing the world. It's just different. And I had a huge conversation with my mom about this when I was when I started rewatching original series episodes. I was like, man, every episode, I'm like, golly, it's so 1960s. Like, oh my gosh, this is so 1960s. And I don't know personally because I wasn't around in the 1960s, but everything I know about the 1960s to me is embodied by this show and other shows I've seen from the 60s and movies and all that kind of stuff. You know, just all the things that I've experienced from that time period.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that there are just different, you just have different sensibilities now than was had 50 years ago. Yep. That's just the way it is.
Yep.
And gosh, almost 60 years ago now. Jeez Louise, that's forever ago. Anyway, it's just different, and that's the way it is, and it's not good or bad. It's just is.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody yelled at us about saying that the original series is, I can't remember what they said. But I guess they thought that we said it was unwatchable. I don't know. I don't remember saying it was unwatchable. I just remember saying it's very hard to watch sometimes.
Yeah, it's not. I might have used the words unwatchable. It's not unwatchable. Okay.
Well, but for us,
there are some cringeworthy elements, though.
Definitely.
That when you look at it in 2019, it's just difficult to like.
I would say that for us, it's not unwatchable, but if you tried to shove that in front of a 20-year-old, it's unwatchable.
Yeah.
So, yes, from your perspective, it's not that it's unwatchable because you know it. You're familiar with it.
Yeah.
I mean, movies that I watched when I was a kid that I watch now and I... All, same exact thing. Oh my gosh, this is so from the 1980s. This is such an 80s movie. Like, holy crap, look at that hair. This is an 80s movie. But I don't care. I still love it because it's one of my, from my childhood or whatever. Yeah. You know, I just liked it back then and I still like it. And anyway, it's just, the point is, it's just different from what you expect now.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, things are so much different now. And, you know, I'm sure we would hear...
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Well, we are on point because we're talking Star Trek. I think it's relevant. That's right. But
Shut up, Blaine!
I will say one thing that I heard someone say in the past week, that they look at... And I believe I said this in the first couple of episodes before... Ruthie became the co-host. Originally was Adam, who I used to work with. But I was treating this show as a sequel to Enterprise. And if you do that, it's a lot easier to take those technological differences. But the thing I like someone saying is that it is a film play and it's not an historical document. So
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's how you have to think about it. And even today, like they are showing this, 23rd century using 2019 technology. And in 250 years, it's going to look even more different. And that's okay. You know, I think back in the 60s, they displayed the future in the best way that they could. In 1966, given the TV budgets of the day, it's okay for things to look different. And for those people that have a problem with it, I get it. I'm not gonna be an anti hater. but I think people need to look at this more realistically and not get all worked up. And, I'm finding, especially some things that happened in the past week, I think the haters have a lot less ammunition they seem to be quieting down a little bit because of some things that were announced this week, which we'll get to later. All right. Rick from Cleveland has the last listener hold your horses, and he called them ironies in his written feedback that he sent through the goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. But they seem like hold your horses to me, so I put them in here. First is Spock was headed to the Mutara sector, future home of the Genesis planet.
Woo.
I did not pick that up, but that's a really good find there, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says the larger irony, and this is something that I definitely thought of, the first appearance of Ethan Peck Spock comes one day after the fourth anniversary of Leonard Nimoy's passing. Coincidence? Uh-huh. Maybe. And it's also worth saying, and I guess I'll spill the beans now, that also that day on the anniversary of his passing, that's when they announced that season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, the show, has been renewed.
Yay!
Yes. So that's
awesome.
Yeah. And of course, a lot of the YouTube haters have been trying to say for, you know, months now that Star Trek Discovery was going to be canceled. Well, ha! And they'll come up with some conspiracy as to why it was renewed.
Right. Because yeah. It can't be renewed just because.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any hold your horses?
Nope.
I'm going to make up for it because I have quite a few.
All right.
I mentioned one already. No previously on this week. I didn't get that. So how did Burnham figure out that 841947 was 749148?
Spock has dyslexia.
Okay. Is that a normal way for dyslexia to work, like completely backwards?
I don't have dyslexia, so I don't know.
I don't know either. But
I am not dyslexic, so.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, I've heard that things are either jumbled up or backwards.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That, like, I would have thought maybe it would be 814497 or something like that, not completely reversed. But anyway. Not anything to dock.
I mean, I would just say that she just... I mean, honestly, to me, it occurred to her that it could be out of order or backwards. And so
yeah,
she did it backwards. But if it didn't work backwards, I'm sure she probably would have tried resequencing the numbers. But honestly, a six-digit number, I don't know how many permutations of that there are, but I imagine it's really high. So
yeah,
you gotta start somewhere.
To me, that was kind of a not really a no, but it was kind of like you would think that Amanda would have found, like, let's put all these numbers in and not read it as 841947. Like, tell me what these six numbers signify, and really only finding one result. Even at 749148, only finding the one result, that's kind of surprising too.
Yeah.
All right. So I have questions. So
okay.
What?
I may have answers.
Okay. What end game does Giorgio have here?
I do not have the answer to that.
But I must say, I am so interested in figuring out this character.
Yeah, me too. I really dig her.
She reminds me of Garak. In her complexity. Certainly not in her character. I think Garak is largely a on the good side, but he's willing to get his hands dirty. But I think Giorgio, she's one that I'm really having trouble knowing, like, what. Like, is she being
what her motivations are?
Yeah. Like, with Burnham, is this truly how she feels? Mm-hmm. Or is there something else going on there? And I don't know. That's a rhetorical at this point. I don't have I don't expect an answer because it's no way to know.
Yeah.
But we're going to find.
Does she always have an agenda, or is she doing this because she really cares?
Yeah.
And does she really care about anything except for herself?
like, I think that she has a genuine affection for Burnham.
Yeah.
That much is true, because like in What's Past This Prologue, we saw her willing to fight so that Burnham could escape. That tells me that, at least with respect to Burnham, she cares for her. But how much further does that goodness go? I don't know if this is all her plan to, you know, rule the Prime Universe. Does she have some other agenda? I don't know. But I don't expect to know. This is something that's going to unravel, not unravel, but it will
unwind
over many seasons, I think, because we know that she's going to be in season 3 of Discovery, probably in the same kind of way that she is now. And of course, she's going to be in this new Section 31 series. So we're going to find out over time, over the next several years.
Yeah. To me, I think that she does love Michael, or at least care for her, but it's in her own twisted way. So it might not necessarily be a recognizable to the rest of us kind of affection.
Yes.
If you know what I'm saying.
I do.
Like, wow, that's an interesting way of expressing that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
That's my take on her.
And here is another related point to that. And do you believe what Giorgio said, that Leland was planning to extract his thoughts like she says, or is it more like Leland said?
I do not know.
Well, this is my thought on it right now, is that I felt when he was telling her to go on to Starbase 23 without Spock, like go ahead before they get there, that seemed really shady to me. Like, why, if they're only 4 hours away, why wouldn't they just go together? That seemed really, really shady to me. So, although I can't definitively say at this point, my antenna are up with him and I'm like, oh, there's something going on there. So I find it difficult to trust him at this point, but I'm all over the place with Giorgio. I don't know. So she could be telling the truth. She could be lying. If to the next point, that Leland was responsible for the death of Burnham's parents, is that possible?
That's not true. That's impossible.
I hope for his sake that it's not true.
I'm sorry, Luke, but I think it's possible.
I do too.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a hard time figuring him out. That's a character that's played by another actor I really, really love. He's difficult to figure out, honestly. I'm not quite sure what his motivations are either.
Yeah.
Or what his agenda is. And I don't really have any idea who was actually lying. If it was Giorgio that was lying about what Leland was going to do, or if it was Leland that was lying about what they were going to do. So I don't know, but I feel like, well, I don't know. See, I wouldn't put it past her to try to get Michael kicked out of Starfleet again so that she maybe has to join up with Section 31 and it'll be like good old times and them running around the universe again. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if it's you think that she wouldn't do something that would end badly for Michael. But at the same time, as I said previously, she may not have the same ideas as what's bad for Michael as the rest of us, or even, you know, Michael herself.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I think about that.
Yeah. All right. I was surprised that Spock suffered from dyslexia. It's quite surprising. Yeah. I'm not saying that I had trouble believing it, but I was really surprised by it. But the biggest surprise is, why haven't they fixed the shuttle bay door on Discovery yet? I saw that at the start of this episode, and I'm like, what? That was in the first episode where they lost the door when the asteroid came through, and they still haven't fixed it yet? I mean, come on.
Well, have they been to a spaceport or a space dock yet or whatever?
Absolutely not.
So when were they going to fix this shuttle bay door?
I mean, that we know of, because like we don't know, for example, where they were when they meet up with Number One. They could have been at a starbase then, but we don't see it. But that's the question I would have is still, even, you know, not going to a starbase, you would think that they'd be able to fix this. I don't know. It's just odd.
I don't know.
All right. That's it for our Hold Your Horses. So now it is time for feedback. And yet again, our open hailing frequencies. Okay, so our first voicemail is, we got three actually this week. First is from friend of the show, Mark Decote.
Hey guys, Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for Light and Shadows. I give this episode 7.5 bad pennies. I'm going to start off with my ups or yeses, as you put them. I really like seeing the brief instance we got the inner workings of the turbo lift. I always love seeing that. And I have to say, I broke out laughing when Tyler and Pike were walking down the hallway and they bring up Volk and Tyler said there's no way of getting rid of him. And when Pike said, I know the feeling, I cracked up laughing so hard at that line. I don't know what it was, but I just thought that was hilarious. And another yes moment was the callback to the mud episode. I like that. Although I have to say, the whole Stamets thing with the mycelial network and being able to navigate time and all that, I thought that was all a little bit hand wavy and just happened way too fast. Now, as for my down or no moments, Pike and Tyler are coming to terms. Yeah, they each saved each other's life, but I really hope that doesn't mean they're going to be buddy-buddy now. I really like the tension that was between them and the distrust between them. So I hope that keeps on going. Now, I do have a few hold your horses. When Michael shows up on Vulcan, we see her flying through the city, and all of a sudden she gets a communication saying, Starfleet Shuttle, identify yourself. Are you telling me that she flew in from orbit and got that close that she's actually flying between buildings before they reached out to her to ask for her identification? That didn't make sense. The other thing that didn't make sense is when Michael finally figured out that Spock was reciting the numbers backward and she does a database search of 749148 and it only comes back with one match. Come on. I tested it in Google and it came up with around 294,000 results. Are you telling me in all of Starfleet's database, those six numbers don't match any serial number, part number, registration number, heck, even an old-time phone number? I find that very hard to believe. Now, I don't have the encyclopedic memory of past Star Trek like you guys do, so I'm going to have to let you remind me about Talos 4. I know the name, and I'm sure you're going to talk about it and probably other feedbackers, but even though I remember hearing it, I don't remember what it is. So I'm looking forward to learning more about Talos 4. Now, just a few more observations from the episode. Wondering if Georgiou was telling the truth about what they were going to do to Spock, or is this just all part of her plan? Was Leland telling the truth? I'm still not sure on either of those. Now, Tyler does an analysis of the probe and says that it's from 500 years in the future. Again, I'm turning to you guys. What do we know about Federation space and all that from 500 years in the future? And I can't wait to see what's going to happen to Arium. Obviously, she was infected or breached, or I don't know, but it seems like she's going to be a central focus of a future episode. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm sorry, Tilly, but Time Tsunami? That does sound pretty friggin' cool to me. Which leaves me with my final thought. When that Time Tsunami was going to hit, Discovery warped out just in time. But what happened to Kaminar? It happened right outside the planet, so that planet got hit. So I want to know what happened to the planet and the population down there. Anyways, that's it for me this week. Thanks, guys. Mark from Ontario, out.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. Yeah. And before I forget, I will make sure to play it now. Thank you so much. As usual. Fantastic voicemail.
I don't think that Pike and Tyler are going to be buddy-buddy. I think they will be on good terms, but I don't think they're going to be buddy-buddy.
I did like what Ken from Chicago said about a buddy cop.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. Some of the things that I wrote down from your voicemail. Yeah, the air traffic control on Vulcan, that was a bit like WTF there.
Yeah. You would think when she reached their upper atmosphere, they would have been like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of too late to do anything at that point in time.
Yeah. Maybe that was a budget cut. Maybe that was actually initially going to happen in space or something and they cut the shot. I don't know, but it did seem a little just hard to believe. I did also like the reference to Mud, but yeah, certainly Mud, that was another time-related episode from last season, and it was a great episode. So, okay, so the Talos IV thing, it's worth saying that Mark watches on Space in Canada, and Space does not show the preview. So he might have figured out what Talos IV was if he'd seen the preview. But Talos IV, of course, for those that aren't really familiar with the planet, that is how we best know Captain Pike, because the first mission of the Enterprise that we see from the original pilot, The Cage, that was also featured in the two-part episode from TOS, The Menagerie, featured them going to Talos IV. So that is kind of tying back into The Cage, and not to get too much into detail at this point, because I know that there's probably some people that don't want to be spoiled. So I think it's going to be really cool. That's all I'll say. And I will agree with you. Time Tsunami sounds cool. I think what Tilly was reacting to is what the reality of a time tsunami is, because the reality is not cool at all.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And good point about Kaminar. I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah, that's a good point, because this all happens on Kaminar, and yet...
Well, right outside their space anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know. And I don't really know much about 500 years in the future on Star Trek, to be honest.
500 years in the future, that would put it at 28th century. And I don't believe we have anything in canon that reflects things that happened in the 28th century. I believe Voyager had dealt with some time ship or something from the 29th century. And I know Picard in Captain's Holiday deals with agents from the 27th century. And then, of course, you know, Calypso, they're in the 33rd century, which I think is the furthest so far. Also, I think Daniels from Enterprise was supposedly from the 31st century. So, but anyway, 28th century, they haven't mentioned. So who knows?
Who indeed?
There's a Matrix there.
Wahaha.
Okay. Next is Steve.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Steve, and a couple quick thoughts for Light and Shadows. I got to start watching these episodes twice, because I guess I thought Spock's shuttle was the one that Giorgio was on, not that it disappeared. So I'm confused about that. I loved Pike's line, the chair outranks the badge. It was great. Anytime I see special guest star Michelle Yeoh, I cheer, because I just love that character, and I love Michelle Yeoh's portrayal of her. Can't wait for Section 31 show. And that fight scene between Giorgio and Burnham was just outstanding, even though, you know, probably at least one of them were kind of pulling their punches. And if they ever talk about it, I'm sure Giorgio is going to be like, well, I let you win. Burnham's going to be like, well, I was not really trying as hard or something like that. So I just, mm-hmm. I like that. We didn't get a lot of Spock in this. I mean, we got a lot of Spock, but we don't really get into his character all that much. I loved the betrayal of him, and can't wait for the next episode, because it looks like from the preview that we're going to get at least something. And of course, the foreshadowing of with Miriam, whatever's going on in her brain there will be interesting to see. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought. And my rating for this, I'll put on the Facebook group. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Steve. And again, before I forget, because I seem to be forgetting a lot. I don't know why when it comes to this. Enough. I'll keep it short to keep things going, because so, it seems to be a long one again. I am a little confused by what you said at the start of your voicemail about the shuttle reference. What Giorgio had, I think, was Spock's shuttle. I see no reason why it wasn't Spock's shuttle. Now, what they're in right now isn't Spock's shuttle. It's the shuttle that Burnham took. So
no, I think he's talking about, like, how did he get to Vulcan if his shuttle disappeared?
Oh.
Or if he disappeared off of his shuttle because Georgiou was found in his shuttle. So what shuttle did he, how did he get to Vulcan? Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Maybe he just booked a shuttle. he might have booked a transport or something. And who knows? I see the point, though. Yeah. So she didn't take Spock's shuttle from the Enterprise, did she? I mean, I guess it's possible.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I didn't really notice because, as I mentioned, I watched this on my phone, so I didn't really see any markings on the shuttle. I will look. You don't have to send me a message about this. I'll put that in incorrect if I'm wrong about this next week. But, yeah, so it could have been, but I think she just took a Discovery shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Last bit of feedback is from our friend of the show, Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 7, and for the Star Trek Discovery Podcast, Episode 32. I did like the episode, although I had to watch it twice to understand everything. I give it an 8.5 Turbolift Treks. Why Turbolift Treks? I think this is the very first time that we really see a turbolift from the outside. And now we see that the turbolifts go horizontally and vertically and all kinds of directions. Perhaps Mark has to adapt his grades for turbolift up and down. You saw it, Mark. They don't go only up and down. A little bummer was that this episode was only 40 minutes. I had the impression it was a little short, but then when I looked it up, it really was only 40 minutes, whereas episode 6 was 56 minutes. So that's a quarter of an hour less. What I did like is that we got Spock quite early in the episode. I actually was expecting, knowing that he probably would be in this episode, that it would be in the last scene or something like that. But he was quite early in. Although he was in, he didn't say a lot. Well, gibberish. So we didn't get a lot of him in the sense of normal talking, but he was there. What I found very touching was the interaction between Amanda and Sarek, where he is the logical Vulcan, but she confronts him with his attitude, and if he is the loving husband, he should behave in a different way. And I think he understands. About halfway the episode, Sarek says, "And I'm not prepared to lose both of our children on the same day." And I got the impression that this very logical Vulcan seems to get emotional at that moment. One other thing I liked is that we more or less got finally a name for the Section 31 ship. Well, it's not a name, it's a number. NCIA 93. And that's said by Burnham when she arrives with the shuttle. Then we have later on, we have three unidentified ships almost at the end of the episode. And they look quite like the Section 31 ship. So I think those three were also Section 31 ships. Nothing is said, of course, but my prediction is a Section 31. And then we have, of course, the revelation that Leland is responsible for the death of Burnham's parents. Well, we have to wait. What's that all about? In the first fraction, I thought, oh, Amanda and Sarek are going to die. But of course, they are not Michael's biological parents. What was very funny was when, and I'm going up and down the episode, but what was funny was when Pike throws the black badge back to Tyler, he is in the process of standing up and he doesn't look where he throws it. Fortunately, Tyler catches it. And I really wonder how often the actress had to do this to get it right. In the beginning of the episode, Burnham is going to Vulcan and the Discovery is going to investigate the signal's residues. Well, I found it a little lame as a task for the Discovery. A big nitpick was that when Pike is double on the bridge, so cloned, of course, a nice team for an Arthur Black fan, but...
Brett, shut up!
No, Ruthie, you shut up. Let me finish my sentence. So... when Pike is double on the bridge, he is the only one that's double on the bridge and nobody else. I think that's a little strange. And actually, a hold your horses. Or perhaps even more a no. Okay, Tilly, when two women are shouting to me, shut up, I really have to shut up. Greetings, all the best. Fred from the Netherlands.
Oh, my goodness. That was awesome.
That was a nice touch there with the Tilly shut up.
Ha, ha, ha.
And he's talking sass. Look at that.
I know. I'm getting sass mouth here.
Yeah. Get what. Cocky, Fred.
Oh, goodness. That was awesome.
Yeah. I have to agree with Fred, though. Mark, yeah, what about the turbo lift up and down? You can't really use that anymore. Turbo lift sideways.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is worth noting, though, we have seen the inner workings of the turbo lifts, not before in any other Star Trek, but we did see this in the season opener, the Brother episode. But we see more of it here, because I remember, Ruthie, you didn't even notice it in the first watch of the premiere.
It was such a quick little blip.
Yeah, but this was a little more prominent, I thought. So, Sarek is not a good father. I hate to say it, but and like when he was talking about the how he thought that, I can't remember the name of the condition that Spock had, the like dyslexia, and he thought that it was treated by a Vulcan thing. It's like, are you that naive? I thought that was kind of like, really, Sarek? I don't think you were paying attention. And that's what I've noticed with him, like in Lethe, you know, when he talks to that, you know, superintendent of the Vulcan Expeditionary Group or whatever that guy was, you know, he just going in there, like not even really realizing that they could say something like that. So there's a strange, I guess it's like a logical thing, but even when he's talking about Section 31, it's like, really? You think their intentions are really that pure and good? I don't know. Of course, we probably know Section 31 better than he does.
Maybe.
And I definitely noticed the ship registry that Burnham mentions, NCIA 93. And I saw that and I thought, NCIA, CIA. Fitting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those were definitely other Section 31 ships. I don't think we heard a registry, but, well, they said something about like 14, 15, and 16 or something like that. But it's clear it was a similar design as the one that we see with Leland and Burnham. So do you have anything else you want to bring up with Fred's voicemail?
No. Think so.
Okay. I'm going to give you the next three because the first two are extremely short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Jill from Facebook says, spoiler, Spock is in it. Aaron from Facebook says, holy crap.
Yep.
And next we get Terry, also from Facebook. And Terry says, Talos 4. Maybe this upcoming further experience Spock has on Talos IV, perhaps they straighten out his mind, is even more reason that he is so dead set to get Pike there all those years later. Is anyone else getting a Saru vibe from this new depiction of the Red Angel? The blade wings remind me of his new quills. Look at his side chest and arm. That's reminiscent, at least to me, of what we saw Saru with his shirt off. Of when we saw Saru with his shirt off.
Well, to that, I would have to say no. To me, what we see, the Red Angel looks female to me. And I have to think, and I actually did a look at what we see in the new credits, which I'll go into more detail in a minute. We see a being, especially in the head, had a similar kind of design, very similar to Arium. Is it possible that the Red Angel is Arium?
What?
Maybe.
Yeah, I tend to think that it might be. I mean, certainly whatever happened to her, I am very interested to see, and I guess we're going to see a lot more of Arium coming.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The next is from a new Facebook group member, Kyle. Welcome, Kyle. Not the same Kyle that gave us rating before, but a different Kyle.
Different Kyle.
He says, between what happened during the cage and these episodes of Discovery, I think we'll see the Talosians have a much bigger impact on the main characters involved. And I said this earlier, but like I had said before, watching the Menagerie, I have to think that there was something happened between the time of the cage and the time of the Menagerie. And I think this is that time. So I think it's going to sync up very well with that. All right, next.
Next is the first Kyle. He says, well, I've often seen a cat without a grin, but a grin without a cat, it's the most curious thing I ever saw in all my life.
All right, next is from Todd, and he always has interesting things to say. So he says, okay, so around what Star Trek show can we think is 500 years in the future? The year that the probe went to and got messed with, 2700 AD? Assuming the present is around 2200 AD, to my knowledge, and I'll stop you right there, it is approximately 2258 right now in Discovery, because we know it started May 11th, 2256. So it is either late 2257 or is sometime early to mid 2258. So not to be a nitpicker. But anyway, that would put it where, he says, beyond Voyager timeline. I did like the Pike and Vok Tyler stuff. Saru is great as acting captain. Tilly Stamets always makes me smile. Where's Hugh tonight? Love seeing Spock finally. When Burnham said she hasn't seen Amanda in a while, wasn't it just two episodes ago? Amanda angrily left to find Spock.
Ooh, one more quick thing. Anyone notice the android cyber girl glitch out a bit staring at her screen at the end? Something about the red dots. I bet that's going to be important later on.
Yes, I believe that is going to be something that will be included later on. And I wonder, are those dots the three signals or is it something else? I don't know. But yeah, I think that is going to be a big thing. And Todd had more to say there, but we're trying to, since a lot of people don't get that, especially in Canada, don't get the Next Time trailer, we'll hold that discussion until the end. But I will continue and give John's feedback. He says, loving season two and thrilled that Trek is exploding once again like it's the 1990s. Yes, John, I wholeheartedly agree with that. In fact, it's showing signs of going way past what we saw in the 90s. So we may see so much Trek that we won't be able to keep up with it all.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. All right, next.
All righty. Ken from Chicago says, bonus. I found out one of Star Trek Discovery's three lady cyborgs is named Erin. Robohead, not Borg Eye. Detmer or Buckethead?
Now, I don't know where this comes from, Ken. You can maybe explain it, and I will certainly look for it. But I didn't see anything where she was called Erin Arium. I mean, maybe he never knew that her name was Arium. And he misheard that and thought it was Erin. I don't know. But yes, I mean, her name is Arium. I did not pick up anything that her name was Erin Arium, but it's possible. But I don't know. Beyond that, I think that's what she meant. Don't know.
There's a picture. Yeah, he has pictures on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Haha.
Yeah, he's got pictures of the three of them. Buckethead. I think she was just in on the Shenzhou. I don't think we've seen one on Discovery. Obviously, Det Mariner eyepiece. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's a picture of Arium. So I think he's thinking that Arium is Aaron, but. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. James is next. And he says, I really, really dug this episode. Nonstop action, dramatic tension, a cool giant squid-like probe thingamadoo. Knowing that we like thingamadoo, I think James will be using it a lot now. Attacking the shuttle, reminiscent of a certain Jules Verne tale. Further what would that be? 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Further creating tension and wonder about what is going on in the future. Now that they've hacked Arium, what are they going to do with her? It seems that whatever is going on here, the overall agenda is benevolent, but they are using seemingly malevolent means to achieve it. However, could there be a good reason the probe slash squid thingamadoo attacked Tyler? He's a black ops guy, after all, and has some issues. Are they trying to prevent him from doing something? Something I just realized I forgot to add to my main point about whoever's orchestrating things from the future and why it's overall benevolent. Ruthie, you mentioned on the last cast causality loops. Yeah, you did.
I did.
Yes. The better example, I think, of what you were trying to get at would be in like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where Ted has to tell himself, remember trash can, and then the trash can falls on the guy's head.
Yeah.
I think Pike and Tyler's trip into the rift here was integral to his own causality loop. The probe thingamadoo was gathering data. That data could have been the info it needed to get the exact dates of events corresponding with the Red Angel's appearances.
Ooh.
Sacrificing Pike and Tyler would have been an example of the needs of the many over needs of a few here. Yeah, I would agree with that. So you're making an assumption here, James, and that is that the Red Angel is the one that also sent the squid probe. And I don't think that you can assume that. We already know from Enterprise, for example, this whole temporal Cold War. So there could be multiple agents in dealing with this part of the timeline and trying to manipulate things to their own benefit here. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that we can assume that it's the same people. It could very well be different factions that are fighting it out. So I would keep that in mind. That's about the only thing I want to say there. But again, James, thank you so much. Great feedback. Okay, I'm going to take the next one as well. Elle says, great episode. And then she has three clapping emojis. To Ethan Peck for taking on such an iconic role. He seems like a great actor. Can't wait to see what comes next. All right, next.
Okie dokie, next, Rick from Cleveland. He says, what a fantastic episode with so much packed into it. If only we'd had a little Reno, it would have been a 10. Oh, what the frick. It was nice to see young Spock not being a jerk. I think we get some explanation for his behavior from Amanda. I believe that the only other time I have seen Sarek show this level of emotion was just before his death in TNG. This exchange between the family was powerful, and it took a second watch to pick up on Spock shifting from logic to Alice when Amanda brought up the topic. He is aware of his environment. Yeah, very true. Looking again at the Red Angel, the figure appears to be female, lending some credence to the Burnham theory. Could it be Arium now that she seems to have been hacked? Maybe, but it is also possible that Arium has been hacked by an adversary of whoever the Red Angel originates from. With the introduction of Talos IV into the mix, we're taken back to the very beginning of Trek. I love this for a few reasons. I think we will get some good reasoning for General Order 7, the only death penalty law in Starfleet. We also get a reminder that there are far, far greater powers in the universe, the likes of which defy imagination.
yet another example of Brian should read the feedback more closely. Because I did bring up some of the points that you brought up, Rick. But great feedback on here. I will say that I agree with your point about the Sarek episode of TNG and the emotion scene there. We did see some emotion, I think, and regret in Lethe. But I think there's even more emotion here, and especially the point where losing both children on the same day, I think was a point. Although I don't really know if I agree on if she didn't return Spock to Section 31, that she would put her career in jeopardy. She might get a reprimand, but if she brought Spock to Discovery, I would think that she would be okay. Now, if she aided in his escape, that would be a different thing entirely. But I
didn't get that. Which is what she ended up doing.
Yeah, true.
I thought she was going to take him to Discovery.
That's what I thought too. But
I mean, I thought she had an agreement with Pike.
Yeah.
And screw what Sarek says.
And I think we are going to see them rendezvous. What I expect is that she will try to communicate with Discovery and let them know to come to Telos 4, but we'll see. Yep. And it was one other thing that he said that I was going to comment on. I totally agree about the factions. That's what I think is going on here. So
yeah.
And it sucks that Jet Reno is not in every episode. I agree with you guys, James, Rick. It would be really good if she was a regular, but, you know, that's not what we have. I think her availability was limited, so she...
Yeah. Tig is a busy woman, okay?
Seems that way. All right. That is it for our listener feedback. Now it's time for some things that haven't been brought up that are in our notes. So what do you have, Ruthie?
I think one of the first things I wrote down, or thought anyway, in watching this episode, was that the way that the bridge operates is so much more the Star Trek that I'm used to, I think. And
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
I like that. And it's comforting.
Yeah. Compared to Lorca.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so different. And I think that was the source for a lot of people were apprehensive about Discovery season one, especially. And I think bringing on Pike, I think it was a master stroke. It didn't necessarily have to be Pike, but I wouldn't want to see it any other way at this point. I think he's knocking out of the park. And this is covering a character that we didn't know a lot about, yet was so integral to Star Trek. So getting that Pike story here, I think is great.
Yeah. Why do you think Amanda didn't want Michael to help?
I think she was pissed off that for whatever Michael did.
Unknown thing.
Yeah. To hurt Spock. We don't know exactly what it was, but nevertheless, it was something big. So I think it was that.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I was wondering if when that thing landed in the shuttle and started and they said data breach, I was wondering if that was a Section 31 data breach.
Hmm.
Because it kind of looked like it wasn't really clear, but it kind of sort of seemed like it was his communicator that the thing grabbed and then landed in the ship's computer and somehow maybe accessed the information. I don't know.
Mm.
I just was wondering. I mean, I thought that at first immediately, but then I saw that he was wearing that thing, like that vest kind of thing. And I thought, well, maybe not. But then I saw that he kind of had some kind of injury that you wouldn't even bother treating if you were on Klingon.
Yeah.
Or Kronos or whatever. that was kind of on his chest area near where his badge would be. So then I went back again and I was like, well, I don't know. So I don't know. Just kind of a thought that I had about wondering if that was even worse than it appeared to be or whatever.
Hmm. You were thinking much like the computer here? Mm-hmm. Why don't we get a computer that thinks like that in this? Please see previous discussion about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah. I enjoyed the girl fight take two between Michael and Philippa. Yep. When she shoots at her and she gives her that look.
Yeah,
and then Giorgio is like, what? I have to make it look good. It's just all in the nonverbal communication thing. It was really awesome.
Yeah, and then shows you how good they work together too.
Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. And then Tyler just continuously banging on that thing. I'm like, all this other crap is going on and it's craziness and excitement, and he's just going to town. He's And then Stamets is like, beam us out now.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's why I thought that was cool. That's pretty much what I got.
All right. Well, I think it had been hinted at, but the credits changed this episode. Specifically, the Red Angel changed quite a bit this episode in the credits. Because originally, it looked more, you know, like a shadowy or a shimmering figure. Uh-huh. And this time it looked mechanical, like Saru saw. And that was from that, based on the design that I saw, that's what makes me think that the Red Angel may be, in fact, Arium. Now, how that would work, I have no clue. How she gets wings, I have no clue. But it looks like it could be her. I mean, I believe what we saw was a female, could be Burnham. You know, I mentioned that a few episodes back. It could be Arium. It could be somebody else. It could be, I heard people even say Giorgio. So I don't know, but who knows? Now, the other thing that I mentioned in about the credits that changed, this is the first episode that the old showrunners are out. We do not see them at all. So Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts are out. I noticed one new executive producer, James Duff. And so he is in. So I believe he was kind of an assistant showrunner, not a co-showrunner, but I believe he was helping out in the writer's room. Now, there's some news we're going to get to in a second that I'll explain there, but I think he's not the showrunner for season three. I'll just say that. But I think I know why. So, and I mentioned, I think earlier, that there was a gap in the credits. So in addition, there were some, I noticed some of the other like lesser roles, there were definitely some new people. So I think like this is the first episode of the Kurtzman showrunning era. That's why there's several people out and several people in. I know that there's been some speculation that Ted Sullivan is no longer with the show, and that may prove out, but this was his episode, so he's definitely still there. And that gap that I noticed, I know Wilson Cruz was in that gap, but maybe Ethan Peck will be there as well, because that gap of characters seemed longer than just one missing character here. It seemed like possibly two. So that's why I'm wondering if Ethan Peck is going to be one of those people. So we'll see. And I noticed a lot of exposition in this episode, like talking about past things and explaining. Like, for example, I thought it was a little clunky, the conversation that Burnham and Pike had when she's leaving. Because I'm thinking to myself, doesn't Burnham know where they're going on their next mission? That seemed a little clunky to me, a little too expositional, but wasn't that big of a thing. But it made me wonder, you know, last year, of course, there was a break, and I wonder if they kind of wrote this episode with the idea, because originally it was going to be 13 episodes. So it's possible that they could have been writing it with the idea that this would be the mid-season premiere. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
But Alex Kurtzman kind of has made it pitched heavily to allow them to do, you know, 14 episodes straight. And they, of course, added a 14th episode. So anyway, we'll see.
Yep.
Now, it was one final thing that I noticed, and I had to wonder about it. And I even looked it up. One thing that Pike said as they're leaving the shuttle, he said, grab the Fahrenheit tools. What the heck are the Fahrenheit tools? This is a term that I've never heard on the show before or in Trek. It can't be temperature stuff, but I don't know. What is that? I looked on Memory Alpha to see what they could be talking about. So I looked up Fahrenheit on Memory Alpha, and it just mentioned the Fahrenheit scale. So it was nothing beyond that. And in the captions, it said Fahrenheit. So maybe he said something else, but it clearly said in the captions Fahrenheit. So I don't know.
I don't know either.
It gave me pause, though. All right. So let's move on to our news. Well, of course, we have a big piece of news that, in case you haven't been paying attention, Star Trek Discovery has been renewed for season 3.
Yay!
Not a shock at all, but I know some of the haters mostly on YouTube have been saying for months now that the show was going to be canceled. And to that, I say, ha! I would even say, you told people that Star Trek Discovery was going to be canceled.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
And I've had people say, you know, why do we have to keep on talking about them? And I'm sorry, but doing a podcast about this and like getting Facebook things sent to you about these videos on YouTube and getting recommended these videos by YouTube, even though you've blocked them, like you basically said, don't show me anymore, and it's still showing me those. It kind of gets depressing. And
yeah, it gets old. Just want to leave me alone.
Yeah. But I'm glad that sanity prevails. I've said this before. They usually don't announce that a show has been renewed until they have all the contracts signed as to who's going to produce it. So I think that's what was holding things up. And I think that Kurtzman, you know, he said in several interviews that he was going to continue being the showrunner on Discovery. And I think that's always going to be the case. But it is very common these days, and this was true before Kurtzman became a showrunner, because Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts were co-showrunners. Okay, so it has been announced that Michelle Paradise, as far as I know, that's how you say the name, that's how it's spelled, has been named the co-showrunner of Discovery Season 3. Now, Like I said, I'm not surprised, because he's got a lot on his plate. Like he's basically the Kevin Feige of the Star Trek universe right now on TV. So he's got all these shows in development. He cannot showrun Discovery by himself. I think he's going to continue to stay very involved, but being able to devote 100% of his efforts, I don't think is realistic at this point. He's got a job to do, and that is to oversee the whole universe. So I'm okay with this. Now, apparently, she's been in the credits as a co-executive producer all season long, but none of her stories have been released yet. According to IMDb, anyway, and I have said many times that you cannot completely rely on IMDb for future, but I'll rely on it in this case. It does have her listed currently as a writer for season 2, episode 9, season 2, episode 13, and season 2, episode 14, which would be the season finale. So we're going to see a lot of her. So while I don't know too much about her at this point, I'm going to know a lot more, and I'm sure that she'll be great. So now, James Duff, the reason why we're not seeing him, I think he's going to end up being showrunner of the Picard series because he's been seen in some of those pictures with Patrick Stewart in the writer's room. And he has a background, like he's been showrunner before of several series. He, I think, was the creator of The Closer and Major Crimes.
Major Crimes was a spinoff of The Closer, so.
Yes. So I know that he has been heavily involved with The Closer and Major Crimes. He wrote an Enterprise episode, so he's got experience with it. So anyway, I believe the reason why he's not named co-showrunner is I believe he will be co- or showrunner of the Picard series. One other thing. I mentioned James Frain is on this week's episode of The Ready Room, just to remind that. And by the time that you actually, it is now past midnight, at midnight Saturday, at least Eastern time, I can say happy birthday to Ethan Peck.
Yay!
And I had to pull this stuff up. Ethan turns 33 on March 2nd. And ooh. I thought, be interesting to see how old are his parents? So Mia Kirshner, who plays Amanda, is 43.
Nice.
I don't even want to think about that. And James Frain has also got a birthday coming up. He'll be 51 on March 14th.
Wow. Yep. I had no idea.
What, you thought he was younger or older?
Younger.
Well, he's a handsome guy.
50-50. He surely is.
Yeah. And another one now, because we see in the flashback there, the baby Spock, as he called him, and young Burnham. Sinequa is also 33. So she will be 34 on March 21st. So,
man, when is Mia Kirshner's birthday? Is it in March?
No, it's not. It is not in March.
Huh, the only one in the family who doesn't have a March birthday.
Yeah, it is kind of funny, isn't it?
March is a busy year or month for birthdays. Actually,
she had her birthday a little early. She was born January 25th, 1976.
Ah.
Yeah, good point. All right. That is it for news. The only other things I ever picked up were just people talking about the episode and wondering about Spock. So, all right. I need to rest my voice. So you want to tell people how they can contact us?
All right. To submit your feedback or connect with us, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, or you can use the SpeakPipe widget. You can also leave a message on the voicemail, which is 304-837-2278. You can email us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com, or you can post in our designated episode discussion thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. You can tweet us. We are at StarTrekGSM. And you can also find us on the TV Time app and leave us feedback there if you want to.
And the best way you can support us is by subscribing to us. That will help you get the episodes on some podcast clients. That does help rank where people show up or will podcasts show up. Anyway, subscribe to us in whatever podcast client that you use. If you go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple and you use Apple Podcasts or iTunes on the antiquated app that is PC and Mac, you will get a listing of all of the Golden Spiral Media podcasts. And there are several that are active right now. Definitely, we are very big in genre TV and movies, so there is probably a podcast for you on the network. Just check us out. While you're in Apple Podcasts, or if you use an app that allows you to leave a rating, like Stitcher, Podcast Republic, I don't know of any other ones, but there are other ones that allow you to leave a rating or review. Go ahead and leave a rating or review. We would appreciate it. So that always helps as well. When we are posting about the episodes or anything else, always let people know. I've been being more active in other Facebook groups. So if you heard about us from other Facebook groups, make sure you subscribe to us on Facebook. And I've been putting a link in our show notes to the Facebook group. We are growing. We actually had a lot of people join in the past week. So thank you so much to all of you that have recently joined up with us, because that is the most popular way for people to leave us feedback. And unless you leave us a very long, long, long piece of feedback, we will get to it. And even if you do leave us something long, we'll eventually get to it. Other ways you can support the network, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. Also, I didn't really say this, but if you see us tweet, retweet us. That also helps. So I can be heard on the Walking Dead talk through. Now, I took actually this week off, which is kind of good, but I did leave quite a bit of feedback that Mark will be using in the episode. So you will hear me talk about season 9, episode 11, Bounty, which thankfully I did enjoy this episode quite a bit more than the last few. I ended up leaving a bunch of voicemails for each section of the podcast. So he's going to chop them up and include them. But
all right.
Anyway, our next episode is season 2, episode 8, titled If Memory Serves. And if memory serves, that is something that Spock said a lot on the original series. We don't know who it's written or directed by, and we don't have a description yet. That usually shows up after the show has been aired. But we did get some people reacting to something that is in the coming soon, which, sorry, Mark, you may get spoiled for this as a Canadian. But
So, spoiler alert.
Yes. Spoiler alert. Okay. So, Jill says, the Talosians look cool. Rick says, next week's previews look freaking awesome. Can't wait.
Todd says, okay, next time trailer. Those were the guys from the cage / the menagerie where Pike ends up, right?
And yes, those were the guys from the cage / the menagerie, the Talosians.
All right.
All right, next one.
James says, I can't wait to see Talos 4. From the sneak peek, the reimagining of the Talosians seems pretty incredible. Can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts.
Yeah, and I'm the thing that I remember most about the Talosians is that they had blood vessels that see them flare up as they're thinking. So I'm thinking that these Talosians had better do that as well, because that was a really cool effect in 1964 when the cage was originally shot, and it still looks really good if you go back. So I'm pretty sure that they will look that way as well. Do I have a prediction? Yeah, I think Spock will be pretty much fixed after this. That's my prediction.
Awesome.
All right, so until next time, I'm Brian.
I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.